From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, days before he was scheduled to die, John Shields had a surprising idea. He wanted to have a wake for himself, and he would be there, alive. What Canada has learned from allowing 1,300 terminally ill people to choose and plan their own deaths. It's Friday, May 26th.
What's your favorite color?
Green.
What's your favorite flower?
Rose.
What color?
Red.
What's your favorite season?
Spring.
Favorite bird?
Eagle.
When was the last time that you noticeably felt that you were free?
That I was free. When I knew that I could make the decision about ending my life.
Last June, following a major Supreme Court decision in Canada, the country began allowing its sickest citizens to die with a doctor's help. A year later, a debate rages in Canada's medical community. Catholic doctors have refused to participate or even refer patients to doctors who will, while supporters say the law is compassionate and should be expanded. But amid the debate, another conversation is happening within families about how to take control of death. My colleague Catherine Porter has been following one man and his family.
John Shields was a remarkable man. He started out as a priest in New York City. And after 4 years, he fell out of the priesthood. He felt very disillusioned. And he ended up moving to Vancouver Island, where he became a social worker. And then he became the head of the biggest union in British Columbia, which is a very big province in Canada. And the reason I was meeting him was he was planning his death.
I would love to go through spring and summer in Victoria and watch the blossoms come and another cycle of life emerge. And it's something I've cherished all the years I've lived here, is the specialness of spring in Victoria. But the thought of it makes me sad. Saying goodbye to all of that is another goodbye that I'm going to have to work through.
John Shields, in September of 2015, was driving down a country road, and he blacked out of the wheel, and he had a terrible accident. His car cut across the highway, went into a ditch, and slammed into a tree. He broke his back in three places, and his wife, Robin, was terribly injured, too. While he was in the hospital, they were trying to figure out what caused his blackout, and they did a cardiac biopsy. Mm-hmm. And they discovered he had this really rare disease, and I'm going to try and say it right, amyloidosis.
When I wake up in the morning, what I will be feeling is an acute numbness, like my feet were dangling in ice water.
It basically means that the proteins build up in different parts of your body, and they cause those organs to malfunction.
Losing the capacity to feel Robin's face.
He had really bad neuropathy in his hands, his feet.
To lose the capacity to not be able to touch the warmth of her shoulders.
And there is no cure for this.
To lose the capacity to sit together and hold hands, and I know I'm holding her hand, but I can't feel it.
And he said that when his wife came home and talked to him about medically assisted death,
for someone to continue living and suffering profoundly and have so much pain that they can't really function through the pain and slowly disintegrate in a horrible, painful way for months and months and months.
I don't want to suffer anymore.
That was the first time he felt that he could be free.
I don't want the next indefinite period of my life to be pain-filled. I had weeks and weeks of pain. And I knew all of that time that it was pain I could do something about.
Medically assisted death is both voluntary euthanasia mm-hmm. and assisted suicide. It means that if you qualify, a doctor will either prescribe you a toxic slurry that will kill you, that you drink, in front of the doctor, or the doctor will put an IV in you and administer lethal medication.
How do you qualify to die in Canada under this law?
Well, you have to be an adult, and you have to give informed consent, which means you have to be with it mentally. Mm-hmm. And you have to have what is called a grievous and irremediable medical condition.
What does that mean?
It means that you have a serious and incurable illness, that you're in the advanced state of decline because of that illness, that you're experiencing enduring physical or psychological suffering, which mm-hmm. is pretty hard to define, and that your natural death has become reasonably foreseeable.
That you'll die soon.
That you'll die soon anyway.
How many people now have exercised this right to die in Canada under this law?
Well, media reports in Canada peg it at around 1,300, and John Shields is one of them.
It's probably the most important thing I'll do. That having control over the timing of my death is beneficial to my spiritual well-being.
And he was a really interesting guy. He was someone who was a huge explorer. He was an explorer of ideas, of philosophies. He was someone who grew throughout his life, you know, rather than calcify. Mm-hmm. And he came to believe that one of the roles that maybe he was meant to play was to approach death without fear and to show people a different way of dying.
The work that I've done on my own spirituality makes it abundantly clear to me that the more conscious I am of my death and dying, the easier it is on me.
It's very strange to hear that someone would be happy, maybe even joyful, to qualify for death.
I don't think, for those of us who are healthy, I don't think we've gone down that tunnel yet.
How does a decision like this made by John about choosing to end your own life on your own terms, on your own timetable, how does that change the rituals that we associate with death and dying?
Well, that's what fascinated me the most. If you know you're going to die tomorrow, or if you know you're going to die next week, how do you spend your last week? What does your family do? Mm-hmm. And I started hearing about these parties, living wakes, end-of-life celebrations.
Okay, this word fascinates me, living wake. What is that?
A living wake. So what you envision a wake where people come together, they have booze, music.
All the money that
they celebrate your life, but you're there.
You're there
for it.
And all the harm that e'er I've done, alas, it was to none but me.
John decided 2 days before his planned death that he wanted to have a party.
The menu is chicken or ribs.
And they had a little room in the hospice they called, charitably called, the solarium, very small room, mm-hmm. and they wheeled him in his bed.
Today is your last day. You're having a party. Is there anything else you're hoping to get out of today?
Oh, I want to touch every hand and kiss every cheek. I want to be close to people. Besides that, I like chicken.
And he was incredible because he had been so tired and out of it a lot of the time before that. And he was he was a master of ceremonies.
Next to me is my glorious and loving, and I was going to say devoted, but after tonight, I'm not so sure.
here. We'll be working this out all night.
You know, when someone is dying, obviously you know they're dying. But then, you know, it's in part of a mystery's hands that when the moment the person dies is mysterious and you don't know that. This is timed. That has been my personal challenge. And, you know, now my husband has today. That's it. So that's pretty challenging.
and he wants to throw a party. And I think, wow, you want to throw a party, and all I want to do is cry in the woods. So that's just a challenge, you know?
I am waiting for you.
A special memory for you. Do you remember this day?
Oh, do I ever? Oh, yes. God, do I look thin in that picture.
Oh, it was a great day.
Yes, it was. Everybody looks wonderful.
Aren't we happy? Look at us.
There was about 30 people there, and...
You've talked a lot about some of John's abilities. I want to talk about one more.
And each person... went around, every single person in the room, you know, spoke to him.
And that is, he has an innate ability to piss you off.
That's my greatness.
We had many disagreements over the years when we worked together. And I guess the time you pissed me off most was when you retired a few years ahead of me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another one of those times. But I refuse to say goodbye. I'm not saying goodbye. I'll see you down the road somewhere.
The end of the road is not far beyond for each of us.
He had mustered like all of his energy, and he was his essential, beautiful, most vibrant self at that moment.
Well, I thought I would take the opportunity among so many of my... my friends, work colleagues, people who have spilt blood, sweat, and tears to make Victoria a more just and caring place, that you're all my friends.
And since he had been on a new drug 3 days earlier, for the last 3 days, he was in much better shape. His mind was way more together. He was coherent. He had more energy. Slept for the first time.
If I have been raised with the question... how come? Why are you doing this? The numbers of times I would answer that would be myriad.
And so I know that his wife and people very close to him had hoped that he would push forward this date. But he didn't want to.
Delay his death.
Delay his death. And many of them, you know, many of his closest people in his family said that it was hard, but it was extra hard because you saw him really as himself dying.
You're seeing me get sad. It would never happen without some sadness. And I want to thank you all for being here, for accompanying me in this journey so unexpected and yet so necessary.
And after an hour and a half, like clockwork.
You ready to make moves?
I am ready to make moves.
The nurses came in and they unplugged his medication pump and they pulled him out and he waved everybody.
See you, Jerry.
See you later.
Thanks for being here. And I will see you later.
There was this kind of...
I love you, John.
Suspended disbelief. Like, what did we just witness? Mm-hmm. Like, so many people saying, wow, that was incredible. Like, I felt like that was... a lesson on how you die.
In the scope of my life, I don't think there's anything I'm ready to leave behind. Whether it was my wife, my daughter, my little dog Diego, my good friends, why would I walk away from any of it?
How much time passed between this living wake that you've just described and John's death?
He died the next morning.
Well, today is the day of John's procedure. So how do I feel about that? I feel decent about that. I mean, I feel like I'm here to help John.
Dr. Green is one of the doctors on the west coast of Canada that does this a lot. I mean, this is the bulk of her practice now.
I'm conscious of the momentous nature of what's about to happen. So I get that. And because of that, I'm very conscious about doing my job well. Like, I've double-checked my paperwork. I've spoken to the family docs. I've checked with the family and the pharmacy. Like, I've done my work and I've double-checked it because it needs to go smoothly. You know, once we're sure that we're going ahead today, I'll get his written permission to do so. Then the IV will be placed by my nurse. Knowing John, I expect he'll be wanting to say something. So he'll have as much time or as little time as he wants to do that. And when he's completely done, I'll ask him if he's ready to begin.
Okay. I just want to write down the time. Well, everyone gathered around him in a circle. He was in his bed. And then his wife thanked him and said that he had given her radiant love and thanked him for the radiant love. And his daughter was just weeping. She was holding his hand up in hers, and she had this sort of metallic green nail polish, and his hands looked so large but so sallow in color. I mean, he's lost all feeling in his fingers. He says he can't feel anything, and you could really see there was like no blood in his hands. And then he said that his father had always said that he would do something great with his life, that he would leave a mark. And that he said he thanked everyone for their kindness and said he had received much kindness in his life, and he was grateful. And then there was silence for a bit, and he opened his eyes and he said, "Are we ready, friends?" And he said, "I am ready." And then we stood around him while the needles were surreptitiously administered and held hands and just watched him die.
I just need a minute. That's really powerful.
It was.
If a death can be beautiful, which still boggles my mind, and I think about his death all the time, it was ritualized. There was moments of deep ritual and ceremony, and he was also funny up to the end. He was adding levity. He was making jokes, and he started to sing. He sang that song, "Who Could Ask for Anything More?" You know, and people around him started singing, like he was enjoying himself.
It's been almost 1 year since this law came into effect, and you've been studying it really, really closely this whole time. What has Canada learned from it?
I think Canadians are still figuring it out. I think one thing that this has done is it's put the topic of death squarely on the table. Mm-hmm. You can't have a planned death without talking about death. So people are talking about death more. A lot of the debate has been around the doctors, but I think that there is a cultural shift that we're starting to see in Canada. And part of that you see in the rituals, and part of that is what makes a good life, what makes a good death.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, if I wanted people to take away anything from my life, it is my life itself. Because the thing that I want people to feel is that this could be you, or any of us have this option to be inside a fully meaningful life. It's a life of generosity. I
We'll be right back. Here's what else you need to know today. A federal appeals court in Virginia has refused to reinstate President Trump's revised travel ban, saying it, quote, drips with religious intolerance, animus, and discrimination. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says the administration will appeal the decision to the Supreme Court. And after a complaint from Britain's Prime Minister, Theresa May, President Trump is condemning what he says were leaks by the U.S. media about the British investigation into Monday's terror attack in Manchester. My administration, the president said, will get to the bottom of this. May's complaint followed the New York Times publication of images earlier this week of the shrapnel backpack and battery used by the bomber, Salman Abadi. The Times did not disclose the source of its information. Finally, voters in Montana have elected Greg Gianforte, the Republican candidate for Congress, who is accused of grabbing a reporter by the neck, throwing him to the ground, and punching him the day before the election. The altercation resulted in a misdemeanor assault charge against Gianforte and a reprimand from his future boss, Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan.
Physical altercations are, there's never a call for physical altercations. There is no time where a physical altercation should occur with the press or with just between human beings.
We've been making The Daily for 4 months now, and we want to know what you think about the show. So we're asking you to fill out a short survey, which you can find at nytimes.com/dailysurvey. That's nytimes.com/dailysurvey. We appreciate your feedback. The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, and Andy Mills. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Peter Sale, Pedro Rosado, Andrew Phelps, Michaela Bouchard, Leslie Davis, and Jeff Taylor. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you on Tuesday after the holiday.